Ulterior.
I saw some of y'all out there liking and retweeting those Rhea Ripley videos, and you know what, man? So did I. So did I, brother. But for real though, shout out Rhea Ripley, she is valid, and she actually has stripes in the scene for that matter, so, you know, maybe one day she can be on the show. It's a dream. A pipe dream, but a dream nonetheless. So, anyways, moving into the actual show. Hi guys, I run a show. I did not put out an episode last week, and that was because the material was really, like, not that large. Like, the pool of material was not, in my mind, sufficient enough to really warrant me, you know, putting in the time to make an episode, because a lot of this stuff is very taxing and consuming, and I just didn't really feel like there was a necessity for one last week. So what I went ahead and decided to do was take last week's material and combine it with this week to make another, you know, like, super packed episode, I guess. So what do we got on this quote-unquote super packed episode, as I so elegantly put it? We got brand new singles by the likes of Eminence, The Home Team, Wage War, Kublai Khan, and a couple of others I want to mention, and then brand new records by Hands Like Houses, Wind Waker, Sweet Pill, and 408. Thank you so much. Thank you for tapping in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. So we probably should talk about this new A Day to Remember tour, because it was a pretty big deal when it was announced last week. If you guys by chance have not heard yet, A Day to Remember will be going on the least anticipated album tour, which is not some kind of a dig from myself towards them. That's genuinely what it's being called. Over the course of this coming summer, with bands like For Your Strong, The Story So Far, and then depending on the date of the tour in your city, it's either going to be Military Gun, Pain of Truth, or Scowl in that last support slot. Now, I saw a few different talking points about this tour, including the size of the venues being played, which did take me aback a bit, because while I understand how big A Day to Remember are, especially, you know, in terms of nostalgia for a lot of us, the last few years have not been the kindest to them for, you know, a myriad of reasons, such as some controversies centered around former bassist Joshua Woodard, and then the very negative response that their most recent album, You're Welcome, received. Like, I don't know how much of that whole debacle that you guys remember or were present for, but it was pretty bad, from the poor reception of Degenerates to the constant delays because of what was said to be issues with the album artwork, to the band actually getting up and leaving Twitter after promoting that album one final time there and, you know, receiving that backlash of sorts. Kind of a shit show, in all honesty. Even if I think time has, you know, kind of been favorable towards You're Welcome, but yeah, the band's been in, you know, some type of mess, definitely to the fault of themselves. So I would have thought, maybe factoring all of that in, there could have been some, like, question marks around the potential commercial success of the tour, at least in the wake of the announcement. But it does look like there's actually a mounting and growing level of excitement for this run, and the events may not have any issues filling up, even with the elevated capacity. Now, of course, there's still going to be a cloud hovering over the band, and there have been a lot of voices on social media expressing such, so I am personally curious to know how everybody out there is feeling right now with regards to this tour. Go ahead and let me know in the comments wherever you're seeing this clip. Are you excited for the least anticipated album tour? Did you buy tickets already? Do you intend to? Are you indifferent towards everything? Do you hate all this? Do you never want to see A Day to Remember's name in the conversation ever again? Whatever the case may be, I'm not going to pass off judgment to anybody on either side of the argument. I'm genuinely interested in knowing what the temperature is right now for A Day to Remember. Obviously, that little bit of me saying leave in the comments was meant for the social media post, but I guess if you're hearing this through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and you have some kind of a opinion on the matter as well, put it on the Twitter or Instagram post for this episode. at me, Discord, I don't fucking know, man. Just, if you have an opinion on this A Day to Remember shit, express it however you feel like you should express it. And in that same vein, I'm going to express what I feel like I need to express for these forthcoming singles, because they were sensational, to say the least. So, first up, we have a brand new single by Eminence. It is called The Black. Eminence cannot miss. Like, it's just completely engraved in their identity as a band to deliver some of the best songs out of any act today in the scene. It's proven time and time again. I even said on Twitter that they might be a top three band in the scene right now, and potentially not even two or three. Like, that top spot really might belong to them, and I'm reaffirmed of that belief when I first listened to The Black, because I was just blown away by it. And even more than a week later, I'm still of the mindset that Eminence really might have that crown as we're speaking. The Black, which is ultimately the title track for their new record out on April 12th, it showcases every strength that Eminence have to their name, from, you know, the really emotional intro to the blistering verses to the perfect balance that Eddie finds with his vocal range, and, you know, even the overall composition of the song, because The Black is able to be enchanting at the right moments, just like it's able to embody, you know, the like the best and most vital elements of metalcore at the exact moments where the song calls for that kind of amplified aggression in that manner. I fucking love how the atmosphere sort of like spaces itself out, and it takes you as a listener along for the journey through the wavelengths per se, and just the way that everything comes together in the song's final minute is just patented at this point for the excellence that Eminence exude time and time again, each go around for a new single, a new outing, and I know it's going to be the same case for the full album that is The Black once it is in all of our hands, because like I said earlier, they really might be the best around right now. They really might have next. This is a special run that we're getting to watch, and I hope everybody gets to relish in what Eminence are doing right now. The home team making strides once again off of brand new single Hell. Two minutes is all that the home team needed to let Hell flourish and become one of the coolest songs in their entire discography, and probably my favorite music video of the year so far. Looking at just the music side for a second, Hell immediately establishes itself as this incredibly, you know, catchy song through this rhythm that is almost like pop new metal, if that's even something that can be, you know, accurately described and depicted. It's very Don Broco-esque in that regard, and I think that's a sound that works really well for this current iteration of the home team. And then I think the verses build up that wall of sound in the chorus where Brian's voice soars to the same magnificent heights that it's always been able to. The video is such a whirlwind and a journey in and of itself. It is fully animated, and it shows the band in different scenarios, like a side-scrolling video game, a Mickey Mouse short, and there's even a Guitar Hero note chart completed with the sounds that the game made when missing notes, which is, you know, it unlocked like a core memory that I had forgotten all about. And like, I'm watching this crazy ass video while there's one of the catchiest and most groove filled songs of the year so far playing in my ears, and it just made for this really fun and enjoyable experience that I get every time I listen to the home team. Thousand Below are back, and they put out a fucking banger of a track. It is called Shake. So when it comes to Thousand Below, I feel like there's never truly been the proper amount of love and adulation shown towards them in the near decade that they've been a band, and a prominent one at that. Like, their consistency is second to none, and that is once again reestablished through this new single, Shake, which has the kind of, like, frantic yet controlled pacing that I have come to know and love from Thousand Below. I think James was given the right chances to once again show off his range as, in my opinion, one of the absolute best vocalists in the world today. You get the exact kind of catchiness and infectiousness from the chorus that this song calls for. The breakdown has this sort of futuristic vibe in a way that I don't think would be out of place when looking at what some other bands like, you know, like Bad Omens or Spirit Box are doing nowadays. And just the overall takeaway from Shake for myself is that Thousand Below, they just have it. You know, they have that intangible and undeniable it factor. It's not something that you can teach. You can't just, like, you know, show a band a song or a record or anything and be like, hey, you know, do this way and you'll have it. Thousand Below just, they have it, and it's undeniable. That charisma that they exude, it's so laced throughout all of Shake in the same way that it's laced throughout every other part of their discography, and it just feels like a celebration in a way whenever there is new Thousand Below to marvel at, because, like I said earlier, that consistency has never once left them. They're always top-notch, always at the top of this shit, and I just want to see people, you know, give their flowers to Thousand Below, especially coming off of a song as fucking magnificent and amazing as Shake. Alright, we haven't really talked about Wage War a lot on this show because they just haven't really been active for most of Ulterior's duration, but they are active again, and they have a new single out, Magnetic. To be fully transparent about this song, the first time I listened to it, I didn't fully know how to look at it. Like, I couldn't figure out if I liked it or not, and I'm not even somebody who, you know, rags on Wage War or has any type of agenda against them, because I've really enjoyed just about everything that they've done, and even in the ages of records like Pressure and Manic, when it felt like some other fans were now, you know, distancing themselves from them because of their sound change. But then the more that I listened to Magnetic and really allowed myself to, you know, just get lost in these insanely catchy hooks and melodies from both Britton and Cody, the connection from myself to the single, it suddenly felt instantaneous. Like, once it clicked, I could not put Magnetic down. Yes, it's a very safe play of a song. Yes, it's nowhere near as heavy as some of Wage War's best and most recognizable songs. But I think that when a track is as effective as Magnetic and does everything it set out to achieve so goddamn well, any desires for something heavier become so secondary, and personally, I am fully on board with whatever Wage War have lined up for the rest of the year now that I understand everything Magnetic wants to be. Jutes took some very big chances, and there is a very big reward in the end for new single Sleepyhead. I don't think I saw this one coming, because for as long as I've been covering Jutes on this show, I had mainly known him to lean into the scene sectors of hip-hop and pop, and then later on pop-punk, and I thought he had a really solid foundation in those sounds. But with Sleepyhead, there is a very, like, downbeat alternative rock nature that I want to liken to a band like Mood Ring, for example, in some ways. Like, it has that kind of delivery on the chorus where Jutes kind of just lets his voice drag along the lines of the instrumentation, and it makes for this really cool and unique experience, or at least unique to the signature styles of Jutes that I had been familiar with up until now. And I would have no complaints whatsoever if Brody explored this side of his creativity more in the future, because he excelled with this single. Won't You Fade is the name of the new single out by Wither Away. I always try to give Wither away lip service on this show because for almost the entire time of Alterior's existence, they have been one of those, like, you know, like gems of a band who I get to discover through this whole endeavor. And for many different reasons, I just can't help but identify so heavily with what they do. Like, whether it is the anime references in their songs or the structure and execution that reminds me of an aged style of metalcore, they're always cooking, and it's no different on Won't You Fade. The chorus in particular on this single is fucking massive and hasn't been able to leave my head for a few days now. It's just overall a stellar song by a stellar band who I hope continue to build themselves and for more people to give them chances, because I think there is a lot in the camp of Wither Away to find enjoyable if you're willing to give them a chance. Kublai Khan continuing to shape the hardcore scene. Here is new single Low Tech. Kublai Khan really have the hold of the mantle for hardcore music in the contemporary age for a lot of people, and I don't think it's difficult to understand why when hearing a song such as Low Tech, which has this very, like, you know, authentic grit and raw nature to the way the song sounds, the progression that it makes in its runtime, the volatility of Matt's voice. It never tries to be flashy in any way, because Kublai Khan don't need to be, and with Low Tech, I think it gives off the exact kind of vibrancy that would translate incredibly well to the band's live set. Like, it's just so easy to visualize and imagine the room coming alive and absolutely fucking shit up while this beast of a song is providing the soundtrack to anybody's pent-up aggression. It's a great time all around, and I think that with each release to Kublai Khan's name, more and more I understand what it is about them that is so alluring to a lot of people. The final single for the week that I want to go into detail on is by Hot Mulligan, and it is called Stickers of Brian. I've had my ups and downs with Hot Mulligan's material throughout the years, and this is one of the most ups I've ever felt with them. That's a weird fucking way to phrase that, but, you know, let me cook nonetheless. I grew a lot of appreciation for Hot Mulligan off of their album from last year called Why Would I Watch? And I feel like Stickers of Brian keeps that core sound progressing forward while still doing just that for the pop punk genre overall. I think this song has the right flare of chaotic energy while keeping the song confined and catchy, and to me, that is something that I think the band has been doing increasingly well since last year. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this song, and I continuously feel myself becoming just that for Hot Mulligan as an overall act. These were the remaining singles from the past 2 weeks that I gave either a 4 or a 5 to in the reviews on social media. Iron New Kingdom by Asleep at the Helm, Doc Martens by Aviva, Miracle by Bayside, Lumino by Belmont, Blindsided by Bill Murray, Empire by Capstan, Become the Blade by Cat's Claw, Sleeping Lotus by Convictions, Show Me Love by Days Like These, The Blade by Dead Awake, Synthesizer by Duane, Crawl Backwards Out of Heaven by Era, Dissociate by Extortionist, Gallows Song by Foxblood, Wormhole by Fox Cult, Horizon Line by Frail Body, The Welcome Party by Greyhaven, Path of Irreversible Suffering by Grieved TX, Pillow Fight by King Cold, Final Battle by Letter Sent Home, Silence by Maybe Someday, Blood on Your Hands by Mayfield, Leech by MNYS, Giant's Despair by One Step Closer, Spiraling Out by Soft Cult, Drama Queen by Swaco, Split by The Ghost Inside, and Letterman by The Story So Far. So before I get into the singles that I wasn't so high on, there was another single that made it into the top 10 for the past 2 weeks, and that was the new one by Boundaries, Scars on a Soul. The reason why I'm not talking about it on this episode is because literally by the time any of you guys are hearing it, the album by Boundaries will have already been released. So I am waiting until then to, you know, really like gather my thoughts about this new song along with the prior singles. And it's a good time. Let me just say that now about that single. It is sensational, remarkable, just like everything else by Boundaries in recent years. And I am very excited for this new record out on March 29th, which again, by the time you're hearing this, the album's out, so go run it up. Okay, so what was I not really feeling the past 2 weeks? Dearly Departed by Escape the Fate featuring Burt McCracken of The Used. So I want to like Escape the Fate. Like, I've never wanted to be somebody who is, like, you know, adamantly against them, but the quality of the material is just always so, like, antithetical to what I have loved from them in the past. You know, I showed some love last year off of FUN and Funeral, which made top 100 at number 100, by the way, but when I listen to Dearly Departed, I just don't hear that sort of, you know, that fight. I don't hear that dog in them. It's kind of just, you know, whatever to me. It's not bad, but it's also nothing I would ever, you know, gossip on here. Pray to God by Tilly. I like a lot of what Tilly does, but I think Pray to God was just a little bit more out there and not really coherent or concise enough for me to put it next to something that she's, you know, done in the past that I found to be extraordinary. And then Leave Me Alone by While She Sleeps. So again, the new record by While She Sleeps will be out by the time any of you guys hear this episode. But Leave Me Alone just, you know, it was the most down that I felt about the album rollout in the entire tenure of that time. The chorus, which just says, leave me the fuck alone over and over again, it just sounds kind of heartless and lifeless. And I feel like that was a big detriment to what is otherwise a pretty fairly decent song. So that was all that. And now I will go ahead and move into the records for the past 2 weeks. And I'm going to start off on a bit of a, you know, less than stellar note, or at least less than stellar in my eyes in comparison to the output from this band in their past iteration, and kind of my thoughts about where they stand right now and what could be happening in the future. So we have a new EP by Hands Like Houses, Tropo. Okay, so I feel like there is a really expansive story that I could tell about Hands Like Houses, because they've been kind of a constant in my life, or at least they were, throughout my high school years and then navigating through college. Like, I can pinpoint moments in time academically by Hands Like Houses songs, you know, like I can think of a setting, a scenery, and be like, oh yeah, I was listening to Don't Look Now, I'm Being Followed right before taking the SAT, or I had No Parallels on repeat while walking through the quad at Texas State to get to my class. You know, just little things like that that ended up meaning the world to me, because from Ground Dweller to Unimagine to Dissonance and then even Anon, Hands Like Houses felt like they were on top of the world, at least in my eyes, for that period of time. That stretch of music is incredible to think about, and then you even throw in the like the Reimagine EP and the Torn cover from Punko's 90s, the single Drift from 2017. This band had some fucking ammunition to let out and be considered one of the greats of the 2010s. And then it kind of went awry in a pretty big way, because the self-titled EP from 2020 is, in my opinion, one of the most disappointing releases in at least the, you know, couple recent years of the scene. I think The Water is a pretty cool song, but everything else just lacked the personality and the character and the bite that made each Hands Like Houses song feel so special. And then factor in the pandemic, which I cannot imagine was easy on an Australian band when it came to having, you know, opportunities in the United States or any other country for that matter. Shit looked dark. And there were a lot of questions pertaining to House like House is. And then I feel like even more came up when Trenton Woodley was removed as the vocalist last year in what seems like a non-amicable thing. And, you know, he didn't have much of a say over it. At least that's how it's been presented to us. And considering that some of what I had to say about Tropo is negative, I do not want it to come across like I was, you know, dead set on disliking this EP because it doesn't have Trenton or there was any kind of agenda for that stuff. Whatever happened between the two sides is their business, and we have been made privy to as much information as they want us to. It is what it is, shit happens, and everybody has moved on by now, but I can't pretend that Trenton's voice was not the centerpiece of Hands Like House's identity to myself. So that does make a difference when hearing these new tracks, and I made sure to give them fair chances because the new vocalist is Josh Raven of The Fame, who I think is an extraordinary talent, and I quite like a lot of The Fame's material, but when I listen to this EP, Tropo, it sticks out to me as sounding like a like slightly heavier version of The Fame, and yes, I know that's going to be kind of what it should sound like, I guess, because of Josh, but I also feel like it lacks most of the intangible elements that could be identified with Hands Like House's, and that does strike me as an issue when it's only Trenton who's not in the band anymore. That stuck out to me on Heaven, which I think has the right idea, but it was going to be an uphill climb no matter what for, you know, this to be the first glimpse of what Hands Like House's will sound like from this point on. The other three singles, or not singles, but songs here, all have featured vocalists. Aaron Gillespie from Under Oath is on Better Before, Emmy Mack from Red Hook is on Blood Rush, and Matthew Wright of The Getaway Plan is on the remaining song that escapes me the name of it right now. I'm just going to check it real quick because I don't want this to, I don't want it to look like I'm not giving this EP any bit of due diligence. It's called Paradise. That was embarrassing on my end, I apologize. And I feel like the inclusion from these additional voices adds some great variety, and the songs are capable of making an impression, but really, I struggle to look at these tracks as being part of the continuation of Hands Like House's. Like, if this were a release under a different name, then I don't know if I would have these gripes, and I know that might be a shitty thing to say, but it's just me being honest and upfront with you guys about where I stand currently with Hands Like House's. But I do also think that it would be dumb on my end, and anybody else's for that matter, to write off this band after this one EP because, like I mentioned earlier, it's only Trenton who is not in the picture anymore. The other members of Hands Like House's are still there with the ability to have the same kind of creative input that they have, in the past on other projects from this band that I love so much. So I know that the possibility of that magic being recaptured as closely as possible is still there. And I will be watching Hands Like House's and their every move the same way that I have been for over a decade now, because I have faith in them still. I have hope that at some point in the future, whether it's in 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, even 10 years, if this thing's still going on by then, I have hope that I will be back on here talking about how Hands Like House's released, you know, one of the best songs of their careers or one of the best EPs or one of the best albums, and I'm going to stick to that mindset. Let's talk about Wind Waker's new EP. It is called Enter the Wall. So, like, a little bit similar to Hands Like House's, but also very different in terms of navigating the waters with a, like, sort of new vocalist. And I say sort of because basically the backstory for this EP is that Wind Waker was previously fronted by Will King. He was on the 2022 album Love Language, which I hold, like, a lot of really fond and strong memories with. That came out back in, it was the first week of May of 2022, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of, like, what was happening in my life at that time, But it was a very pivotal and crucial moment in time for myself. And Love Language ended up being, in some ways, along with like Fear and Rouge Carpet Disaster, like the soundtrack for that time period. And so, like I said, Love Language is something that's really special to me. Will departed the band, and Liam, who was the backing vocalist, he moved ahead into the lead spot that he previously held. And so, factoring all that in, I didn't fully know what to expect out of Enter the Wall, and I say that because some of the songs that we got to hear beforehand, they didn't necessarily provide me with a clear direction. One of the songs here is called Sirens, which I think Sirens is like the closest that the EP gets to the true magic and the essence of Love Language that pulled me in. I think Sirens is an amazing song, really fucking catchy chorus, just overall a great time. And then I hear something like Fractured State of Mind, and I feel like I'm reminded more of Icy Stars rather than Wind Waker, and it's not a bad song or a bad sound even, but it's just something that's a little bit like unclear when it comes to how Fractured State of Mind is meant to fit into the discography of Wind Waker. And when I look at the other two songs here, The Wall and Villain, it's a little bit of a similar story, because I think The Wall, okay, this is gonna sound weird, but it reminds me of Corpse Husband, like in the hip-hop verses that are meant to kind of be like, I guess, a little bit darker and more menacing than the other material here. It just kind of has that kind of a cadence to it. And then Villain, I hear Caskets more than any other band in Villain. Like, that progression and that, you know, like a larger-than-life feeling that the song really tries to encompass, that's what sticks out to me. And, you know, like I said about Fractured State of Mind, it's not a bad sound for Wind Waker at all. It's just not a sound that gives me a clear understanding of who the band is now and what the direction is. I think ending the EP on Sirens was the best possible decision, because Sirens, at least, you know, in my opinion, is the song that you build a foundation on. Like, you look at what you're going to be doing next, whether it's another EP or a full-length album, and you should be turning to Sirens and thinking, this is who we are, this is what we want to sound like, and this is what we want to, you know, like, I guess, like, this is the vibe that we want to give off in the future. So I feel like Enter the Wall kind of leaves a few more questions than it does provide answers for. But I'm also not going to, you know, try to judge the entire trajectory of a band just off of a 4-song EP. And an EP, for that matter, that I feel like it's clearly meant to be experimental. So, you know, I hope that this was enough for them to kind of get this out their system. And moving ahead, we can look at a clearer direction for Wind Waker in the future. But again, the EP is not bad. A little bit confusing, but not bad overall. And Sirens, I cannot say enough good things about that song. Another EP, the last one for the episode. This is Stark Child by Sweet Pill. This wasn't my first time listening to Sweet Pill, but it is my first time really giving them a spotlight on this show and talking about them, because I wasn't really tapped in for the 2022 release, Where the Heart Is. I listened to it, but I didn't review it. It didn't necessarily, full respect, I didn't necessarily find it to be something that I could gravitate towards, something that I could, like, really gas up on the show. A fine release, but again, nothing, like, in my mind, spectacular. But when I hear Star Child, I get the sense that the band, you know, they had an understanding for the type of 4 songs that they wanted to push out for the EP, and they stuck to a direction that I think is incredibly favorable for them and the kind of style and vibrancy that they exude. Just very, like, no pun intended, but, like, very sweet sounding. Like, it's just, I feel good hearing this EP. It's just very relaxing and laid back. And, you know, given some of what I'm listening to outside of Sweet Pill right now, that's a very good interlude and a break of sorts. Because I look at songs like Star Child and Chewed Up and it's kind of like there's a little bit of an angst, a little bit of an indie rock flair, a little bit of pop punk thrown in there, but just overall a very just soothing and relaxing and like brain massaging like energy and a rhythm going through these songs. And it's just really hard to like pinpoint another band in the annals of time who, you know, kind of sound like this exactly. I don't have like a clear comparison or a metaphor to make, and that's also kind of my way of saying that I think you guys, you should be tapped into Sweet Pill, you should be into this EP, because this is providing something that I don't really get to hear a lot of, and I'm very grateful to have the chance to hear this. Eternal kind of slows down the pacing just a little bit, but I think in all fairness, the other songs here are not exactly aggressive enough to really call Eternal like, you know, the ballad of the EP or the slow song of the EP. It's just a track that kind of approaches its ideas a little bit differently, and I love that for it. Sympathy is the closing song on the EP, and at some points in the runtime, it's giving the Serial Experiments Lane opening song. If any of you guys have heard it, I feel like you've all heard it, even if you didn't, you know that you were hearing it. It's that song that's like, and you don't seem to understand. Sympathy kind of gives like that sort of a warmth to its instrumentation and progression. And I think that's, you know, again, like a very favorable style and artistic expression for Sweet Pill. So, you know, even if this was a band that I wasn't super tapped in for beforehand, I am more than into the idea of Sweet Pill now. Star Child was the perfect release for me to kind of, you know, cement my mind into that sort of that fandom per se, and I now do consider myself to be a fan of Sweet Pill, and I'm very excited and eagerly awaiting what's going to come next from them. And then finally, the singular album over the past 2 weeks, but also in my mind possibly one of the best stories coming out of an album this year so far, I'll explain a little bit what I mean by that. It is Hot Mess by 408. So I have also never really spoken too extensively about 408 on this show before, and it's just because, you know, again, I wasn't super tapped in for them. 2022's album, Out of It, I wasn't really paying attention to their effort and output at that time. It also came out at a time where things are really packed for the show. Like that month of October 2022, where it's just like every band under the fucking sun wanted to do something. So, you know, 408 kind of unfortunately took a backseat for an extended duration for that reason. And I felt like when it came to the rollout for Hot Mess, a lot of these songs were just really undeniable, and there was kind of no way for me to, you know, not be locked in and not look at 408 and ask myself, okay, who is this band and what is it that they're doing? Because whatever it is they're doing and whatever it is I'm hearing, this is some of the most concise and consistent pop punk music in the scene today. I'm not exactly saying 408 is one of the best pop punk bands, but I'm saying that this EP, or not EP, but this album kind of gives way for them to really one day be in that conversation. Like, I really think they can have that kind of a trajectory now. And it's not just because of like how Hot Mess pushes ideas of contemporary pop punk music forward, but also how it kind of like fits a very like aged 2000s vibe. And in some ways, like this album has a lot of songs that feel like, you know, they could have really, at the very least, in like a bare bones kind of a way, been on a record by Blink-182 or the All American Rejects. You know, in some regards, I feel like these songs have some kind of a connected thread to bands of that past time. Remember Her Like That and Grow My Dreams, Clean My Room. These are songs that exude a lot of fucking energy, like some real upbeat, you know, emphasis. And I feel like that's a really good way for 408 to show what it is that they do and why they're doing it better than almost anybody around them, in my opinion. And then some other songs like the title track Hot Mess and Break Up With Your Girlfriend, they are some of the catchiest songs I've been able to hear over the last few months. And, you know, again, they fit right into that 2000s vibe slot that I was mentioning. Like, so much of this record just has that going for it. And again, it's a style and an approach for 408 that, even if it's not unique, it's something that they can do incredibly well. The only two instances that I feel like the album, you know, kind of loses steam a little bit, Get You Off is a 30 second song. And I feel like if they had committed to, you know, like a minute and a half or 2 minutes of a straight up punk song like Get You Off, then that could have been fleshed out to the extent where I might have been calling it one of the best songs on the album. And then the closing track, Glow On, is just a little bit out there for my like highest degree of liking for right now. And I say for right now because I feel like Glow On can grow on me. It was maybe just a bit jarring the first time I heard it to, you know, go from this very consistent pop punk album into a closing track that is very like pop oriented. Like, this is something that I could have imagined easily, you know, hearing on the radio in like the age of the early 2010s when you had like Payphone by Maroon 5 or Hey Soul Sister by Train. That's kind of the energy that I feel like Glow On is giving off. But again, it's not a bad song at all, and I do believe that it's going to grow on me, and in a few days or weeks or months, I'll be able to, you know, put this song in the same echelon as other tracks here. The one song that I know for a fact I'm not going to be able to put it into the same category as, and that's because I cannot put any song on the album into this song's category, is Life Goes On. I talked about Life Goes On a little bit when it was a single, and I'm going to talk about it even more now, because Life Goes On is one of the best songs of the entire year so far, not by just 408, not by just a pop punk band, but by any band in the scene. Life Goes On is one of the most like beautiful and like, you know, heart churning acoustic songs I've heard in recent memory. And I don't know if it's even meant to be like that sad, but I hear this song and I think about, you know, my own experiences of like growing up, leaving home, like having friends and loved ones kind of like fade away, not for any real reason, but just because that's how life works. It put me into a really emotional state, and it puts me into that state every single time I hear it. And Life Goes On is the kind of song that is going to stick with me for a very long time, if not the rest of my lifetime. 408 delivered immensely on this album, Hot Mess. I have just gone back to so many songs on it over last week. I feel like, you know, kind of what I mentioned about Glow On, this is the kind of record as a whole that is going to continue to take shape and is going to continue to be elevated. And, you know, by year's end in December, who's to say I'm not talking about 408? You know what I mean? And that was it. That was every album, EP, and single over the last 2 weeks for me to talk about. And yeah, I would say that in the future, whenever things like this happen where, you know, a week might not be packed enough, or at least in my head, packed enough to make an episode, I might go ahead and let things stack over a 2 week period and then put that out there. I just feel like that's a lot more productive for myself, and it gives, you know, me more chances to really gas up the material that I want to. And maybe it gives you guys out there who are listening to me enough chances to, you know, discover something that you didn't know beforehand or know about beforehand, and you now have it as part of your rotation, your library, whatever the fuck it might be. So yeah, that could be somewhat normal in the future, but my goal is to put out an episode every single week. It's just sometimes that might not be really possible or feasible, so I hope you guys understand that much. Yeah, anyways, I'll let you guys get out of here, do whatever you need to be doing. March Madness might be on when you're hearing this, so go check that out. I don't have a particular favorite right now because a lot of the underdogs got out. I think right now, as of this recording, NC State is the lowest seed remaining. And by the time any of you hear this, maybe NC State got fucking bodied. Maybe they got thrown to the wayside. Who knows? March Madness is fucking crazy. Sports is crazy. Did y'all see the new kickoff rule for the NFL? That's a little fucking weird, but, you know, like I do with music, let them cook. I'm not going to steer away from that mindset for sports either. And yeah, that's pretty much everything I'd say. So I'll get out of here now and let you guys subsequently do the same. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And as always, for the love of the game, let's make a scene.